Morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to our second session of the day, looking at the unique event concept that is the Cycling World Championships here in Glasgow and across Scotland in August next year. As somebody from Glasgow myself, who writes about the international sports industry for a living, it's a great honour to be able to do this and explore the concept a bit more. I have with me two gentlemen who should need little introduction, but we'll do it anyway, as is the protocol. Paul Bush is Visit Scotland's Director of Events and has taken the strategic lead at Event Scotland in bringing an array of leading sports events to Scotland over the last past decade. And directly to my right, David Lapartien is the President of the International Cycling Union, the UCI. No stranger to Scotland, having been here many times in his current role, and before that as President of the European Cycling Union at the European Championships in 2018, and is also the former President of the French Cycling Federation. Gentlemen, I wanted to kick off by going back to the beginning, if we may, discuss how the event was conceived. It's a major undertaking. It's 13 World Championships in one across 10 host venues. And I think there's still perhaps in our industry this kind of prescribed view that a rights holder had a certain list of events that you can bid for, but this was quite unique in perhaps the conversations you had to create the event. Paul, perhaps you could maybe take us back to the initial talks you had in 2018, and then David, your thoughts on the sort of the birth of the event concept and how it was part of your manifesto.
Well, I'll let David talk about the vision, but we were together at the Gold Coast Commonwealth Games in 2018. And the following week was Sport Accord, many of you remember, in Bangkok. We were both travelling there. David said he had an idea. It was quite an expensive idea at the end of the day, wasn't it? But it was something we discussed over breakfast, not over a glass of whiskey, I might say. It was quite early one morning in Bangkok. And it's quite bizarre seeing David here today in France. I'm actually going to Bangkok tomorrow. So it's bizarre how these things come around in a circle. But I guess for me it was something uniquely different. We were just about to host the European Championships in 2018 in Glasgow, which again David was part of in terms of its original inception and conception, and it excited me. And that, you know, as you get older in life, you don't get excited quite as much, particularly with event properties. But this really excited me because it was very different. It was going to be challenging, but it was going to be a real opportunity to showcase Scotland in a 363 dimension. And I think that's unique. Most event properties, as I said yesterday, actually, they come into town and they leave. I think if we're really clever and we think through really carefully, next year has an opportunity to showcase everything that's great about Glasgow and Scotland, and also about its people, about its communities, and about what we do for society. Now, that's a pretty tall ask, but you have to dream a bit sometimes. You have to have that aspiration and, you know, that passion to really push the envelope. And I guess David's vision, and he can talk about the vision and why he did it, they perfectly came together at that moment. So we signed a non-disclosure agreement, which again is uniquely different. And I think for rights holders, that's probably the way we need to move forward. Saves a lot of money in bidding, saves a lot of time. But it's like a marriage, isn't it? You put two people together and you do the deal.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. I would say you said everything, but it's really a nice adventure that we've been working together. When I was running for presidency of the UCI in 2017, of course I wrote a manifesto about what I wanted to achieve as the president if I were elected, among these, one of the points was clearly to create one time every 4 years a global UCI World Championship. But initially, it was just about the five Olympic disciplines. It was not about all the disciplines. And of course, in link with the 2018 European Championships here, because at the time I was the UEC president, the European Cycling president, and I was on board with the 2018 European Championships here, and I saw that it was clearly a very nice concept. And I said, why don't we think about this for UCI and for the World Championships? So we started like this, and after we said, why not to enlarge to maybe all the disciplines? And when we had these discussions and this breakfast together, I remember we said, okay, what's new for you, David? There a way we can work together? And said, maybe we have something, and I want to share the vision with you. And Paul and his team, they said immediately, yes, let's do this together. And I said, of course, instead of spending a lot of money for in the breeding process, let's build this event together. It's just about not bidding. It was also about building the event together and sharing our visions. And I remember also this morning we spoke, I said, maybe we can enlarge other disciplines like indoor cycling. You told me, what is indoor cycling? And I show you some videos about this discipline. And that's really a great, that will be a great event. And also for the athletes themselves. Last week we had the Athletes Commission meeting in Abu Dhabi. And sometimes, you know, in cycling, when you discuss about track cycling, BMX flatland or road, it's not always, to find some common topics to discuss, it's not so easy. But when then we had a presentation of Glasgow 2023, and as an example, the rider of indoor cycling was so happy to say to the guy from Urban Cycling, you will be able to come to see me and vice versa, and we had the feeling that something was really moving positively also among the athletes themselves. To be part of a global project. So that was the initial vision, and I would say we even enlarged the vision that we had at the beginning.
And Paul, I mean, we've spoken many times about many high-profile sports events over the years, and I can sense from you that you are, genuinely the most excited about this one, which is saying something, giving you a love of golf. Why is this so different, and how does it stretch beyond these 11 days of competition? I mean, lots of events organizers talk about a social legacy, but why will this be different?
Well, I'll do the advert first. Last night's win for Scotland in Abu Dhabi was huge. We have never won World Golf Destination. So to beat Spain, Portugal, Turkey, we were quite shocked last week when we were told. So, it was really important that our golf lead went out. And Alan received the award last night in Abu Dhabi. But as an aside, I guess this is different. It's exciting. And, we've just had a coffee and we share notes quite frequently on lots of things. It's also scary, And actually, sometimes if it's scary, that makes it more exciting because it pumps the adrenaline. It makes you actually more passionate about what you're going to deliver. I think the other thing that I've really enjoyed is the collegiate nature of the project, in that we've brought together Scottish Government, UK Government, and the city into a really strong collegiate partnership. Alongside the rights holder, UCI, and other partners, we have a platform that arguably can theoretically solve all the challenges and problems we have. Hey, the garden is not rosy. We have, we talk very openly. Huge budget challenges for the event next year, as every event in the world has. We have huge challenges around recruitment of people, huge challenges around supply chain. But as we sit here 9 months out, we are absolutely committed and absolutely confident it will be the finest cycling event the world has ever seen. And it will give David, as a rights holder, that opportunity to go to 27 in France, and then 31 wherever they go next, and build something that is unique within a sporting context. Not many sports have a multidisciplinary environment that cycling has. Aquatics do to some extent, but how many, have you got 19 in France now? Is it 19 disciplines?
19, exactly.
So 19 World Championships in 2027 in one geographical location. That's, that's bigger than the core sports in a Commonwealth Games environment. So that contextually gives you a sense of the flavour. The promo for David is, if you're out there and you're thinking you've got some money for 2031, I would recommend you talk to him quickly.
David, on the rights holder side, the governing body side, in selecting a host, I mean, there's a lot of parameters that are very important, but how important is participation and engagement across a host country before, during, and after the event?
For us, it's really key, because what you want also to show in your sport is a passion. So here in Glasgow and across Scotland and in UK, we know we have this passion for cycling. And that's really important, because my grandfather always told me, you have only one opportunity to make a first good impression. So and here we were sure throughout the UCI that the emotion will be seen worldwide. We will have, I would say, hundreds of thousands or millions of people around the different routes. And that will be nice, because this is the vision. This is what you want to show to the world, and that's really great for us. And the engagement of the fans of the cities, it's so important for us also to have the different colors. We were with Paul also in Wollongong. It was in Australia for the road this year. It was nice to see in all the shops the rainbow stripes. You know, the city was in fact with our colors. And that's also something amazing for us. And this is really what we want at the UCI, to feel, of course, we have different disciplines, different, but however, it's one single and unique event. And with cycling, you have something more than other sports. You are not only in a venue that it's a closed venue, that in fact you can be everywhere in the world, you will not see the difference. For some disciplines like a mountain bike, of course, when you are in some wonderful places you have in Scotland for road cycling, you can also showcase the country. And that's something unique. And this is where we can make also the difference with cycling. Cycling at the opportunity to go in, I would say, in your house. Otherwise, sometimes in other sports, you have to go to the venue. But we go also to your house, which is a little bit different.
Paul, you've referenced there the extremely challenging financial climate that this event and many other events are taking place in, and also an organising committee that had to begin recruitment during a pandemic, for instance. The issues you've talked about, inflation, tourism bookings, you know, recruiting staff, how has this played out for real in organising this event?
Well, I don't think it's just the cycling event. I think it's every event we do at present, you know. Whether it be a small community event or a large international event such as this. And it's just something you have to become more agile, you need to be to adapt to the environment, you need to do things differently, you need to think of innovative solutions. And, you know, we are all being stretched. Everyone in this room is being stretched every day by the environment that we now live in. You know, we were just talking about how people's culture have changed, weren't we, over coffee and on the back of COVID. And I'm sure you've noticed that, you know, and I don't say this critically, but perceptually, the reluctance for people to go back to the office, I think, is an interesting discussion. The change in people's attitude to work, you know, I'm of an age group where you got up in the morning early, you worked all day, and then you went to bed. You know, that was probably the wrong thing. But actually, I think people's prioritisation has changed. Work-life balance has changed. And I think that has an impact on how we will deliver major events in the future. And it's something we're still trying to adjust to. And it probably will take us several years to come out the other end. I think attrition in organisations and companies is much higher than it's ever been, because people will go into a job for a short period of time and then they'll move on to something else. It'd be better paid, they didn't like it, the work-life balance didn't work, or they just wanted another change. So we are facing a very, very different environment. But it also provides opportunities, that does as well, to do things differently.
And on the stakeholder side, I mean, there's quite a unique setup for this event in terms of the delivery, the way the LOC, the way the UCI will work together. David, I wonder if you could talk us through the sort of benefits of that model, how it's been set up and what it means. Sponsorship-wise, for example, 50% of the sponsorship inventory is being sold together, which is quite unique. How has that stakeholder setup sort of worked out? And then also, what has the take-up been on the sponsorship side? I mean, you've had quite good buy-in from UCI partners, but then also, I mean, Paul's talked about it yesterday, it's a tough market right now as well, but how has that all fitted together?
So when I just said previously that the goal was clearly for us to build something together, we also discussed, you know, everything and since the beginning, the point was to avoid any point of conflict in the future. And of course, normally in a world championship, we have a share 50-50 in between. We have 50% of the rights. The organizers have 50%, but of course, sometimes it can be a little bit challenging. So we said, look, we need 25% for our current sponsor, in UCI. The organizing committee need also 25% for the public authorities. We have still 25% to sell, I would say, each of us. We said, let's put this together instead of being, one and not against the other. But so we said we will go collectively and then we'll share. And that's, so we will push in the same way. So that's also clearly something we never done before. And it was open, to the local organizing committee to see if whether or not they wanted to go in this way. But in the beginning, this is the way we wanted to work in a really common way. And that's something very special. And I think it's working well. Even it's the market after the COVID is not so easy, to be honest. But the principle is a good principle. And also on the way we work, on a daily basis, we have now every month a meeting together at the highest level. We have one this afternoon also. So every month we have this meeting. Our teams are working on a daily basis. I can see truly here and Trudy here, but that's nice. But we also believe that at the highest level, we need also to meet, on every month, sometime on different UCR events. So that's also an opportunity for you to see the track, to see the mountain bike, to see the road, and to also, yes, see what you can take from this on even improve. So, yes, it's really clear, transparent. If there is a problem, we put this on the table. So there is no tension in between the Glasgow and Scotland, and the 2023 LOCOG and the UCI. We are in the same boat. We have the same goal, and we'll succeed together.
I think that point David's just made, and we made that decision this summer, has been a defining, changing moment for both of us in that we literally do meet somewhere in the world every month, often around events or around diaries. But it's something I would strongly advise you do with rights holders in the future. Now, I know we have relationships through contractual. We have a long form agreement, which is our contract with the UCI. We very rarely pick it up. I always give the story that in the Ryder Cup in 2014, we never got the contract out of the cupboard. And I actually think the first time you get the contract out of the cupboard, you're in trouble. Because relationship is king. And I think that, we have difficult discussions, don't we? Don't think it's all rosy. It's not. We'll probably have some difficult discussions this afternoon. But at the end of the day, we leave the room as one with the goal of resolving the challenges to collectively move forward and deliver a great event.
I want to ask on the broadcast side, I think as we sit here in Scotland, we look at all these big events that come to Scotland, we attend them, we look at the fan engagement here. The bit we kind of quite often forget about is the impact in the rest of the world. Now, BBC will be showing it here, the EBU will be showing this event across Europe, there will be broadcasters out, beyond Europe. I'm interested in your thoughts as to how the host broadcast is put together, which I imagine will be an EBU project, and how, does Visit Scotland beyond picking very, impressive locations that look great on TV, yet the primary goal of a host broadcast is obviously to film the action in the best way and to let the spectators view it in the best way. But are there ways that you can showcase Scotland to a wider audience? Can that fit into the host broadcast at all, or is that those two never shall meet, if you know what I mean?
I think it's a relationship discussion. We're very fortunate that because of the nature of the events next year, we will have events from Fort William in the north right the way down to Dumfries and Galloway in the southwest of the country, and then all points within that. Ultimately, we've retained one goal, which I think is important, is that athletic performance is king. Because at the end of the day, these are world championships. So we cannot in any way endanger that. So the field of play is really important for me, having come from a performance sport background. But it's paramount for the UCI, because this is a qualification for Paris next year in many disciplines. But it also provides us with that great opportunity. Cycling is a unique event. You know, if you go to most events and watch them on television, you could be anywhere in the world, unless you're very clever with the branding and the postcarding. But, you know, as Lars did this year, we were talking about Denmark this morning, Lars, you'd be very proud. You know, that the Grand Depart in Copenhagen this year was probably one of the finest examples of tourism and sport coming together. 750,000 people on the streets of Copenhagen on a day like Glasgow had yesterday. And they didn't move all day. And then obviously they had the opportunity in the other two stages to showcase and postcard the country. And that's what we'll be looking to do. But David can talk more about the broadcast platform because that's huge.
Yes, David. I mean, how much do you look at the broadcast? There's a huge free-to-air element to this, which will generate a lot of exposure for the sport. And then also, how much will you look to showcase Scotland? Is there perhaps a clause about no rain in the long form, that there'll be no rain during the broadcast? That cannot be guaranteed, I'm afraid.
But of course, you know, I also come from Brittany, so I'm a Celtic brother, and it's the same. We have also the same weather as we have today, always a blue sky, and it's also on your flag, so I'm sure it will be the case for in the middle of August. But however, you know, as I just mentioned, cycling is something unique, is that you can showcase the country. And just an example, during the Olympic Games, the first gold medal in the Olympic Games is always usually men's cycling. Why? Because you open your screen. Now it's not only about TV, but you open your screen, and what you will see is a city, the location of the. And so when you are in Rio, in Tokyo, you will see, you know, the landscape. You will not only be in an arena where it can be as, and that's something the Olympic is aware of, and this is something we want also to do. And we have a contract in Europe with the UBU. Outside of Europe, we can sell the different rights. But it's really key for us that it's, of course, will showcase the sports, the performances, the athletes, but not only. And a little bit like Tour de France, and you mentioned the case of our friend from Denmark. It was a huge, huge success, and wonderful weather, wonderful landscape, and I think it was also great for the tourism after in Denmark. And that's really key for us, that in the way we showcase, you know, the race, it's not about only the race, it's also to showcase the country. And we find a good balance in between both. And it's also a way to even make the performances higher. When you saw this video, you know, with the athletes at the top of the hill in Imola, that was great. It's about performances, but it's also about landscape. So we can combine. And for the UCI, what is also key, it's also to be in free-to-air. Because if you want to enlarge the audience, if you want also the host to be comfortable, it's not only about being, you know, in pay channel. It's really the free-to-air, because this is clearly the way you can also enlarge the visibility of the sport itself and the visibility of the host.
And just on that, some really interesting stats from 2018 European Championships, which neither of us have covered, is that when you aggregate and accumulate a number of sports or disciplines, audiences go up. And that was one of the reasons and the rationale behind the European Championships in 2018. And I was with Barbara Slater a couple of weeks ago, many of you know from the BBC in Liverpool, and she's really confident that by aggregating 13 World Championships, the consumer, as in us, the viewing and dwell time will go up. Therefore, we benefit as a country. David benefits as a sport of cycling. So it's quite an interesting conundrum.
And if I just may on this, because this is really key, to give you one figure. In 2018, the TV audience worldwide of the European Championships, that is an event that was born only 2 years before, was higher than the Tour of Flanders. Probably one of the most iconic cycling classics. Just because it was part of a global project. So this is where we think there is additional values.
Yeah, I mean, that was certainly borne out here in Glasgow with the European Championship. Triathlon was the one particularly, I think, which on the BBC, I forget, 1.6 or 1.7 million viewers or something, which was way above what it would have for a standalone triathlon European champs on a red button. You know, that aggregation really does make a big difference. Just a couple of other topics I wanted to touch upon before opening up to the floor here. I mean, that we had the recent UCI Road World Championships in Wollongong in New South Wales, and the Track World Championships in Saint-Quentin, just outside Paris, which, Paul, I believe you have attended both. What learnings are there? Anything you can steal from there that was excellent that you look to replicate in 2027? Sorry, in 2023.
I think they were both excellent events. I mean, I think it was quite interesting, very different. Obviously, a Road World Championships, I think we both said that Wollongong, with the resources they had, did an outstanding job. And again, they delivered on right on the back of COVID. But if you looked at the event there, it was spectacular. A wonderful backdrop along the coast of New South Wales. And televisually, it was really special. One takeaway, which Trudy and I talk about a lot, in fact, we talked about coffee in Wollongong, was the number of bikes that will be coming into Scotland next year is one of the scary things. We think there could be as many as 30,000 bikes. So you just think of the logistics around that. Planes, trains, hotel storage, security. We had Mike Jardine from Mountain Bikes present to our board yesterday. They unfortunately had a theft of bikes at the World Cup this year in Fort William. In terms of the velodrome in Paris, it should be called your velodrome, because I know you were the person that put it in there in the first place. But that's the Olympic velodrome for 2024. A great venue. I think the atmosphere in there will be stunning. And, you know, without being blasé, I think we have a great, excuse the pun, track record of delivering track events in Glasgow. I think we can always learn around the Road World Championships.
And, David, I mean, in terms of future plans for this event, Haute de Savoie in France will host in 2027. That will also occupy the kind of 1 year to go slot before LA, in the same way that this will be 1 year before Paris. I think you're trying to create a kind of almost mini Olympics of cycling in terms of the festival. What are the future plans for this event, looking beyond 2023 to 2027, and then also as you look for hosts for 2031?
So first of all, I think we are very happy that we've been able to award the 2027 edition before the first edition. I remember when I met with the IOC president, Thomas Barr, told me your idea to put everything together and in Glasgow and across Scotland is a wonderful idea. But what you will have to achieve is to find a second organizer for this event, because for these big events, it's not so easy. But a little bit the same in Haute-Savoie, we started with a kind of verbal deal. And we also build this together, and this is where we can see that cycling is continue to bring some new disciplines. We'll have, you know, enduro, gravels, that were disciplines that were not part completely of the UCI when we agreed, you know, on this process. So it will be 19 UCI World Championships. So it has been officially awarded to Haute-Savoie. And for 2031, I'm very happy to tell you that we already have four potential cities at this stage. It was meeting with us, share interest, and the goal for us is to award the 2031 in September 2024 at the UCI Congress. So, but I'm really optimistic that we will also have a new organizer, and in two different continents at the moment. But just to give you just some figures, because as you mentioned, that's really a big event. We have 202 national federations in the UCI affiliated, so only three or four, Pacific Islands are missing, but otherwise we have all the countries, and the goal is to have all of them with at least one athlete at the start, and to be really a worldwide event. And we have around 3,500 or 4,000 athletes qualify by their national federation. And in addition to this, we will have around 8,000 athletes qualify more for mass participation, like Grand Fondo, like gravel. So they will have to qualify. They will have to wear the national jersey, so they are completely part of the event. So that means it's in between around 12,000 athletes. So that's really, really huge. But to combine also high-level competitions with also mass participation, you can see the gravel this year. We launched for the first time ever the UCI Gravel World Championship. We had at the start Van Der Poel and some top athletes. and also some riders who qualify in qualifiers. So that's also something unique in cycling, and this is what we want to do. It's really to enlarge the cycling. So I'm really quite optimistic for the future of this event, and thanks to Glasgow and Scotland for the first edition.
Thank you, David. And do we have any questions from the floor for David or for Paul? Don't be shy. Oh, we've got lots. This lady in the back row is first, I think. If we have a microphone, perhaps.
Thank you. So, Cathy Chapman from WIS team. I guess, first of all, just to say I'm super excited about this event as a Scottish cycling fan, so can't wait. But in Scotland, we don't have a lot of particularly fast roads outside of the Central Belt, and it's quite a long distance between, for example, Glentress and Fort William. I just wondered how you were thinking about making this a really coherent feeling event for spectators, and I guess, importantly, David, you mentioned athletes actually wanting to participate and watch each other. What can you do to make it feel like a coherent event for the spectators and for the athletes and for your other stakeholders that are coming to Scotland?
So maybe you can complete, Paul, but we have around 50% of the events in Glasgow, but we wanted also to be, first of all, not to be only in Glasgow, but to be across Scotland and also in places where there is a heritage about cycling. If you take Fort William, of course, if we think about Dornhill, not only in Scotland but worldwide, this is really a place that is well known for this. So we thought, when we discussed with Paul, that it was also important not to be only focused in Glasgow. We know it can be 2 or 3 hours sometime in between some areas. Of course, when you have 200 titles in 11 days, you will have to make choices some days. You can't be everywhere at the same place, but you will be also sometimes able, at least on TV, on screen, to switch from one to another, but you will have to make some choices. But I'm sure that some of them will want also to discover the landscape of Scotland, and they will be more than happy to join this venue. And we have also other venues in other places. We have also some races like road cycling where you can start from one point and also finish in Glasgow. So, yes, we try to combine this, but we know that it will be impossible for everybody to be everywhere at the same moment.
I think David used the word choices, and I think that to me is becoming the new norm of major events. So if you look at next year, your question is perfectly appropriate, and it's a challenge. We have to be honest, Trying to get from Fort William to Dumfries and Galloway in a day will be virtually mission impossible. Not just because of the distance, but the transport network's not fantastic. And that's not a criticism, that's a fact. But if you think of what we've got ahead of us in a world landscape, 2026 in Victoria, there are 5 centres. 2032 in Brisbane is a huge geographical canvas for the Olympic Games. So you will have to start to make compartmentalised choices. So do you base yourself in Glasgow and go down to Dumfries and Galloway or Glentress, or do you face yourself in Fort William? And that will become a consumer thing. I think the one great thing about this event, and one of the attractiveness, certainly for me and I think the government, was the EBU platform, because it's free to air. And David prides, the fact that, obviously we all, probably most people in this room, will have some form of pay for television channel, whether it be Netflix, Amazon, or BT Sport, whatever. But anybody will be able to watch this on free to air, which I think is critical. And if you see what the BBC have done around Commonwealth Games, around European Championships, around other major events, it will be great. And our aspiration is to have BBC Breakfast here, the one show here in the evening, so that actually we get into totally new audiences for the sport of cycling. So great question. Can't answer it. It's work in progress, but I think it's part of the new norm of major events. The days where everything is in a nice tight geographical envelope with one games village, I think is history. It's gone.
We have a gentleman poised here, ready to ask one.
Excellent. Hi, Stuart Snowden from Ipsum Squared. Paul, one of your opening comments was around the fact that David had had a very expensive idea. How or what have you had to do different to drive real money revenue into supporting staging the event as opposed to just the benefits of exposure and things like that, given the size of the numbers that you've been talking about and the increased scope?
I think a few things, and David talked about an adventure. You know, it's a journey and an adventure, this, because it's never been done. You know, now that has great excitement, it has great possibility, but also has great challenges and risks. So, and I think for, you know, and I'll speak on behalf of the team here, I think the executive team have found sometimes, because we're in a very different environment, that the risk appetite in the current environment of the economic climate, particularly in the UK, has become quite daunting for them. But that's the world that we live in at present, you know. So money is tight. We have to make innovative ways to save money. We've had some very honest and open discussions about what we should and shouldn't do, about quality of delivery, about overlay specifications. You know, we've even talked about, do we drop some of the disciplines, which we at this point in time have not agreed to do. There's no simple answer to your question. All I'm saying is that we're working with all the partners to achieve the right result based upon the finite resources that we have available. And I think with 9 months to go, we still have some headwinds. You know, a lot of procurement contracts are still to go to market. We don't know how the supply chain will have an impact on that, how inflation will have an impact on the supply chain. You know, the UK hit 10.7, 10.8% today. We have a budget tomorrow. We have a Scottish budget in December. So it's incredibly challenging. But you have to always look over the top of the hill, down the other side, and say, is the prize worth still going for? And in my view, it is.
We have a minute or two left. There's one last question. Oh, there's one.
James Truman from Deloitte Consulting. Question for David. Obviously, we've heard some of the themes around budget pressure, recruitment pressure, and also around supply chain. Looking longer ahead, further ahead, 2030, maybe beyond, what do you think is the biggest challenge facing the UCI and the cycling industry, and what do you plan on doing about it?
So it's a large question, and this is also something we'll discuss this afternoon. First of all, what is sure is we lost time due to the COVID, and we are running a little bit late, you know, on the way to deliver the event, but we will finish. I said to Paul this morning, it's like a movie, it will finish with a happy end, but in between it's a little bit stressful for all of us. And one of the point is about also human resources, because as Paul mentioned, and this is a discussion that we had this morning, the link in between the people and their job is completely different today. Sometimes the passion is not exactly the same as the one before, and we are facing more turnover, not only in our organizations, but worldwide. So to stabilize the expertise, to be able to deliver the event, that's something key. Of course, we are also facing some budget issues, that's clear. Just also to give you some figures from the UCI, when we built this together, it was clearly also, as you said, everything was transparent on the table. Just for example, the fees that are paid to the UCI, we said, okay, look, this is what has been signed in 2017, because we spoke in 2018. This is the price that we sold our different events, so it was clear and transparent. We'll take an inflation rate of 1.2 at the time, and so that was the price. So this is not something, we never come back on this. But that's a reality, and of course the costs are today higher for you, higher for us. We have, for example, to provide the TV production for the UCI. That's also a challenge. But however, we are on the same boat, and yes, we will succeed together. But it's about human resources, budget, and time is running, and the time we lost with the COVID is not. It's not easy to close. To close the gap, but what we wanted to be sure so is that this will not affect the field of play. In fact, in itself, after we can sometimes discuss which level of organization do we want, but the field of play in itself is something we don't touch.
Thank you both, ladies and gentlemen, if you could join me in thanking both.